I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars. And this week, Leyland Sherpas. Do you ever look back and go, what did we do before the internet? How did we completely waste time? And
Argos catalogue. Simple. Done. Well, you've seen my scrapbook, haven't you?
It's quite heartening. I have seen your scrapbook. It's quite heartening, though, because actually my kids have had a catalogue from a toy store for a month or so, which we gave them so we could say to them, look, you know, have a little look through there. Is there anything that you want to ask
that
Father
is the
Christmas
for? Present.
And it's amazing how long they can spend browsing a catalogue still.
I mean, I love a high-quality, thick-stock colour catalogue, I have to say. Demon Tweak. In fact, the Demon Tweaks catalogue came through the door day before yesterday.
Oh, they still do a catalogue?
They still do a physical catalogue through the door, and I was quite pleased about that.
Do you know, I said last week that, and this is not a plug, but it's going to turn into one. We were talking last week about my new book, because I've got a new book out called Boring Car Trivia Volume 2, available on Amazon as a paperback or ebook. But I said last week that I abandoned a plan to make the cover. I wanted the cover originally to look like an 80s car brochure. One of those ones all of the range that Vauxhall and Ford and Austin Rover used to do particularly. And I couldn't make it work, so I gave up. But it did make me think, after we'd been talking, that no one does those anymore. They just wouldn't, for various reasons, not least, I mean, who really reads car brochures? Everyone just goes online. But having been online last week, looking for some details about a car, just for some research or something, a lot of car makers' websites now, they're fine for the superficial details, but if you want to deep dive into anything, like, do they all have heated seats as standard? You're going to lose half an hour trying to find that out on the website, because sometimes it's not immediately obvious. And a good old-fashioned brochure with one of those incredibly arcane and complicated tables in the back of it.
Oh, I do, like a flowchart, or a, yes.
You know, the ones where it's got like sort of, I mean, some people still do these, but not all of them, where you then can, you can sort of look across and you go, I mean, back in the day it would have been, right, does the GL have a tilt slide sunroof? Let's have a look. Oh no, it's a clear circle, not a filled in circle, so that means
that's
it's an
right.
optional extra.
Yeah.
And it was very easy to
Are
comprehend.
You poor? And it's just, there's no asterisks at all in the table, apart from right at the bottom, which just says steering wheel and ashtray. all of the important things, obviously.
I used to spend a lot of time, as I'm sure you did, just poring over car brochures. And I did. I think there was a period in the probably late 80s when Austin Rover, or Rover Group as they probably were then, used to do an incredible line in very, very detailed information in brochures. They would sort of, things that were standard on all models across a range because they were just something the car had, like driver's left foot clutch rest. And it would be, but they'd still list it, so you knew the car had got it. And it was like they'd go into a lot of detail.
Near side rear wheel.
Yeah,
yes, it has one.
List offside out all four wheels separately. Offside front wheel. Offside rear wheel. Check yes.
Passenger door. Yeah.
I used to enjoy those brochures, and they are something of a lost art now. It's a shame, but you know,
they'll come back.
I can't quite see how. I mean, I suppose magazines have come back in as much as sales of mainstream magazines on newsstands are sort of always waning a bit. Yeah, but super high-end quarterly magazines such as the Road Rat, for whom I write sometimes, they're resurging. Yeah. So maybe the super high-end car brochure.
I think something creative and a bit, you know, I could see Volvo doing it on papyrus or something, you know, saying it's some sort of eco-credential.
Yeah.
Or, recycled plastic found in the sea, woven into some sort of folder.
Flax. We've printed
flax. Actually, there you go. Yeah, so it's a flax composite ring binder with some lovely material. I do think there is a place for it. Weirdly, a really lovely, totally escapes me now, which is bad, follower of ours on social media actually direct messaged me and said, I found a load of old brochures and I'm going to get rid of them. Are any of these useful to you or Richard? And he sent me a screenshot, and I was like, I'm totally having five out of those. And I've got a couple for you as a surprise from him.
So, oh, have you?
I'll post them to you for early Christmas.
Aww,
how about that?
Cheers.
And and it was weird because I actually looked at them when they arrived early this week, and I was just poring over the magnificence of some of the shots. It's the aspirational scenes which no one normally would ever do.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, I've just parked my MG BGT on the really sort of soft part of the sandy beach, you know, not the slightly wet, harder sand where you know you can park and come back in 5 minutes later and it hasn't sunk, but the really soft bit where you're like, that's not coming out. That's just not going to come out. That car's still there now.
That's a job I would have liked back in the day, being responsible for the brochures for a large car maker, because I think that was a full-time in-house job. I'm pretty certain it was.
Like a scout for locations and stuff. Like that. My mate's dad at secondary school was a location scout for TVs and and perhaps commercials. I mean, he was crazy.
Imagine it's 1973, and we are heavily mustachioed, heavily smoking men with an office at, I don't know, sake of argument, Cowley, and we're regularly sent out. So we're up in North Wales, we're at Towyn or somewhere, looking for a nice stretch of beach on which to stick.
Of course you are.
Stick a couple of maxis for a brochure shot. And you've probably spent 2 weeks doing that, and then you have a photographer down, and they'd chuck some money at it, I think, wouldn't they?
Oh, there'd be so many business lunches.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't there? So much pointing and polyester trousers.
Yeah.
It'd just be amazing. Of course, you turn up for a recce on a really uneven sort of wet beach, and you'd have nothing but a pair of super thin slip-on shoes, and that was the only thing you brought with you.
Yeah, actually.
No appropriate walking shoes to get over the terrain.
A windswept North Walian beach, highly incompatible with the flared trousers of the time. You'd be like polyester sails. You'd get blown for some distance. But
70s ill-fitting clothes for the job. I'd love that. Brilliant.
A mate of mine did work experience at the what would it have been then? This was in the late 90s. He did work experience at the Rover film unit, which was there was still an in-house filming thing.
In-house?
Yeah. He said it was on the wane. And it was very much, you know, a bit understaffed, and they didn't do a lot. And they probably, but at that point, by then, they'd have been using a lot of agencies as well. But he said there was still an in-house film unit because he went and did work experience there. And I went, what was it like? And he went, yeah, it was all right. I just remembered they still had a British Leyland ashtray.
Oh, the fact they've got an ashtray as well.
Well, I bet they were still smoking indoors in the late 90s, so...
Yeah. Of course they were. And did he go on to being an accomplished master of the art?
Yes.
Not of smoking.
No, he doesn't smoke, but he did. He's a successful TV producer now, so I suppose it...
There you go.
It helped
it offered
in some
inspiration.
Way. Yeah. I don't know, I just remember that I was just quite... When he told me about this, I went on eBay and looked to see if there were still any British Leyland ashtrays for sale, but at that point, sadly, no.
I've got Austin Allegro new old stock matches. You know that? I've got some. They're actually in my drawer, really close to where I'm sat now. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, I found them on eBay, and... And I thought, apparently they used to hand them out in the dealer, the dealerships in early 70s.
Of course.
And I bought 5 boxes of them, I think. So I might actually do a ceremonial light of one box when my Allegro is on the road. You know, like when you smash a bottle against the side of a ship.
Do a genie.
I'm going to genie some British Leyland matches. I'm going to bloody do that, Rich. Yeah. I'm going to do that. I know what I wanted to open today's chat with, the whole Formula One Fireball extravaganza. So I hear Romain Grosjean's now going to be involved in a travelling show involving fire jumping, all sorts of stuff like that, because clearly he's not going to ever die.
Well,
because if he was going to die, it would have happened just then.
It is pretty frigging amazing what happened Sunday before last. Because I mean, yeah, there's so many sort of horrible variables there. What if the barrier had been on top of him and he couldn't have got out because he was sort of pinched between the metal parts of the barrier, the car was upside down, something like that, that he couldn't escape in the way that he did.
And he was in the car for a very long time with flames.
Yeah, which, you know, as Niki Lauda showed, and I know the flame proofing is better than it was in Lauda's day, but it's the smoke inhalation / getting the flames inside your lungs that is just not worth contemplating. It's horrible what can happen. So it's deeply unpleasant. And also, a friend of mine was involved in it was a setup for some filming, but he was caught in a situation where a set fire that was, you know, set by special effects people was slightly stronger than envisaged. And of course, what a fire does in an enclosed space is it sucks oxygen out of it. And then what fire extinguishers do is also attempt to quell a fire by filling the air with a thing that the fire can't breathe on. But people can't breathe on it either. And he said it was really, really unpleasant because he couldn't breathe. He sort of made the secret signal. They came in with the fire extinguishers and that meant he couldn't breathe either. And he just went, I thought I was going to suffocate. But it's really horrible. It's like drowning with no water. Really, really unpleasant. So
That's not cool.
You think
not cool.
Grosjean was in there and he's in danger of breathing in horrible stuff. And then, you know, they're sort of firing extinguishers at him. But that's only going to make it more unpleasant. I don't know if this was true. Somebody, a friend said to me also what made it worse was that his tear-offs on his visor melted.
Yeah.
So effectively he couldn't see. So he's trying to escape.
Of course, we didn't. And you can't lift your visor up.
No,
because
it'll let in.
Your eyes will get burnt.
Yeah, so
It was amazing. I mean, it was lovely to see. I keep watching it a few times just because it's one of those situations where you just think you've got about 15 seconds to make the right decision.
Yeah.
Everyone around him and him of like, what are you going to do? You're obviously not, you're not unconscious, so that's great. Mm. But yeah, it was amazing. And also weirdly, I think it was 3 days later was the anniversary of Paul Walker's death. The Fast and Furious actor bloke who died in a what was it? The Porsche.
It was a Carrera GT, wasn't it?
The GT crash where it went into a lamppost, didn't it, and caught fire.
Yeah, and that
I think
was
it was a, that was a weird situation.
Well, that
in
was
itself.
A salutary lesson in older cars. I know it wasn't that old, but it had been in storage, I think, hadn't it? That car and the tyres had gone off.
Yes, that's just what I heard.
And
so they were old tyres that looked fine. Yeah. There was still lots of tread.
But, I mean, that's got to be a problem for a lot of, particularly sort of high-value cars that just get tucked away, but then they change hands. Yep. They change hands to someone who goes, well, I'm going to blow the dust off this thing. And the tyres are crumbly rocks, then you are going to have some problems. And I guess that's what happened with the Paul Walker thing.
I feel like there's someone's missing any tire manufacturers out there could be missing a trick here. You know when you buy batteries for like children's toys and things and you put your fingers on there's a strip on the edge sometimes and you put your finger and thumb over it and it'll go, yeah, this one's got about 2/3 left before it's dead. Imagine if you could just do that on the sidewall of a tire and it'll go, guys, I'm just wanting to say that I am 6 years old.
Well, they are date marks, aren't they? That's the thing. You can tell.
You can, but it's because it's a black tyre with black writing and I think the date of the tyre is quite small.
Yeah.
You almost want it to be kind of idiot-proof. I mean, bring back white lettering.
Oh, there you go. Problem solved.
There was never anything uncool about white lettering. Well, I don't mean like, I don't mean it has to be in a huge point. So like the date that you bought your dice is in like 3-inch high writing on the side. So everyone goes, oh, look at Captain Cheapskate over there with his 2007 tyres. But yeah, it could be a thing, couldn't it? It could happen.
Now, funny enough, there was something I wanted to bring up with you. That is, I've just been reminded of it by talking about white wall tyres or white lettering tyres.
I absolutely love a white wall.
There's
especially a white band.
White band. Well, there's a guy...
Or a Goodyear Blue Streak, blue band, wonderful tyre.
What do you use those for? What are they? What would you...
It was old school 60s muscle cars. They were performance tyres. And they did red lines as well.
Red stripes, yeah.
Yeah, the red line. I want a set for my Charger, but they're about £8,000 a corner and they don't actually grip very well. So I'm like, doesn't sound like an attractive proposition.
But there's a guy in my neighbourhood who really likes American cars and has...
This sounds like the beginning of a blues song.
Yeah. Guy in my neighborhood, da 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 da. Likes American cars. Not a classic, but yeah, he's got a few American cars, and his devotion to American cars is absolute because I've noticed that his wife, partner, whatever, has a sort of most recent shape Jeep Cherokee. You know, the one that no one really bought because it had that quite funny front on it.
It does have a strange front on it. Yeah, I know that one.
She drives one of those. And someone says, can I have an Evoque? No! I like American things. You're going to have something American.
I'm always a bit worried about people like that because it's almost like they're completely blinkered.
Hmm.
Do you ever feel like that? So you go, I get it, you like American cars, but you do know that some American cars aren't very good. Just like some British cars aren't very good. Just like some Japanese cars aren't very good.
Yeah.
But you've committed to the point where it's like, I'm not going to deviate from this course now. I'm always going to buy a Cherokee of some sort. Even the bad ones.
Well, so I agree because I sort of thought there's a devotion to shitness because one of his cars is one of those sort of 90s Firebirds, Pontiac Firebirds, and they were cack.
90s, so is it like an IROC, kind of a Camaro IROC kind of thing? I'm trying to remember.
No, they were just the ones they're very overhangy. And very terrible.
They're very swoopy front.
Yes.
It looks like the talon of an eagle,
yes,
the front end.
Yes, yes.
They're really good at drag racing and nothing else.
Yeah.
Because of their aero.
Yeah, and they just toss otherwise. And he seems to have one of those. And he's got an old 70s Trans Am, which, you know, is pretty cool.
I've got time for that, yeah.
And I feel like I'm tittle-tattling on someone who doesn't know it. But anyway, so he likes American cars. Well, that's fine. But he's recently got a Dodge Charger, and not one like yours, not a classic 60, 70.
Oh, not a four-door.
Four-door, recent-ish. Well, you know, sort of, it's probably 10 years old, something like that. I can't remember what reg it is. This brings me to my point, eventually, which is British plates always look shit on American cars.
Oh, yeah, which is why I don't have them.
Do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
I mean, there are a number of problems. One of them is that if you put them on the back, the slot on a lot of cars is only designed for a US-sized license plate, so you have to have a square plate, and it just looks a bit wrong.
Yeah.
But then they look cack on the front. I was looking at this guy's Charger. He went past me this morning when I was out with a dog. And obviously there aren't a lot of Dodge Chargers around our neck of the woods, so I immediately went, oh, it's that bloke from down the road. Look, there he is in his Charger. Looking, I bet he's really pleased because he's clearly only just got it. Really pleased with his Charger, even though, you know, he could have bought a 300C and then it's broadly the same car,
well,
and he could have had
I've
a right
to drive.
I've
got to be honest, the 300C is a far better looking car, but anyway.
Also, yeah. I think it looks quite low spec, this Charger, so it would suggest it's probably the V6. And you just go, why?
What are you thinking? Well, at least go one or the other. You either go looks or performance.
Yeah.
If you can't do both,
just
and
do
obviously,
neither, which I think is way better.
Yeah, if you were going to go looks, you'd go for a two-door car. You know, you go for a four-cylinder Mustang, let's say.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, it always looks just the front, a British plate on the front of that car. I mean, I think it's partly because you see a lot of American cars, if you go to America, depending on which state you're in, a lot of states, you don't have to have a front number plate, and people don't. And cars look really clean.
So good.
Really
they
clean
do. Corvettes.
Front plate. Yes, yeah.
Corvettes without a front plate are just wonderful.
So
wonderful. Well, I know people, Rich, who perhaps drive American cars in the UK, and they have American registration license plates that they have stamped with a UK number on, but it looks American because therefore it fits in the apertures and it looks authentic.
Is that not illegal though?
That's illegal. Uh-huh. Yeah, it is. So, but I've tried to tell these people that strictly speaking it's not legal, and they blanked me.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, but I just thought it's the same way of like I've got a couple of Japanese imports about my person, and they have strange apertures, don't they?
Yes, because again,
mostly square,
JDM
or just off square.
Yeah,
and again, some of those plates don't look quite right when people.
No,
I feel like
I know. I know this is ridiculous, but if I see an early MX-5. I'm always like, ooh, early MX-5, that's nice to see, isn't it? And I go around the back and it's a JDM one, because you can tell by the back number plate hole, can't you? I'm always a bit
It says the anus road.
Yeah, I often will say anus on it, and then there'll be various other things that you, particularly MX-5 nerds, can probably spot it at 20 paces, the speakers and the headrest and all that malarkey that gives away a Japanese market car. But if it's one that's sort of masquerading as a Euro car, and then you get around the back and go, because it's just almost like because a UK car with a proper wide UK plate hole and all of that is a bit of a rarity, it's a novel thing to see.
Did you
these
just
days.
Say UK hole car?
You know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, it just plate sounds hole. A bit. Yeah,
plate hole.
No, I know exactly. I know exactly what you mean, and I think some people need. There are some cars which people drive around in, and you could lift the aesthetics of it hugely by just buying them a pair of really decent number plates that either aren't damaged or just the wrong shape or the wrong shade, and maybe cleaning their windows and wheels, and then that would be it. You know, windows and wheels, it lifts a car. It really lifts a car.
Yeah, and headlights.
If you haven't got time to wash the whole car, just go to town on the wheels. Wash them, dry them, wax them. They look great.
Like having a smart pair of shoes.
It's like having a pair of really smart shoes, but with boot-cut jeans that are just dragging through the remnants of whatever's on the pub floor.
Well, they've gone really frondy at the back because they've worn.
They've gone really frilly, and they're just picking up all of the night out detritus. That's what they're doing.
Oh, dear.
It's like a horrible Friday night floor mop. I always worry about severe boot cuts that the owner of said boot cuts is going to get them caught in the pedals of a car.
You know,
a pedal box, when you move from one pedal to the other, imagine there's a bit of frayed boot cut going on. It could just get hitched on the side of the side of the pedals. I do worry a little bit. And of course, in the 70s or the 60s with bell bottoms, I mean, what was going on with the pedal box? You imagine if you had platform shoes, bell bottoms, you're like, oh yeah, I totally drive a manual. whatever, Pontiac Firebird. You're like, dude, you're a ticking time bomb. You're a polyester ticking time bomb.
I'm just off in my all drum braked car whilst wearing enormous platform shoes and flared trousers and possibly some sunglasses that are tinted an idiotic colour that actually impairs your vision. Off we go.
Oh, and by the way, I'm running really late. I'm trying to strike up a cigarette and all my clothes are inflammable and the interior of the car is inflammable as well because it's all just really kind of lighty plastic. And by the way, there's three kids in the back that are just rolling around with nothing but a seatbelt. Not a seatbelt, nothing but like, I don't know, an ice lolly between them. Yeah, good old 70s.
Good old 70s. We survived.
Oh, my latest video on my YouTube channel. Again, I will plug
it. Seamless Plug-O-Rama this week. We're doing well.
Seamless Plug-O-Rama reviewed the Fiat 500e, you know, the 2021
I
Fiat
saw.
500.
Well, I didn't see it. I haven't watched it yet, I'll be honest. I was really busy the last few days. But
that's all right, Rich. It's okay.
I saw it because I saw the still that you put out where you'd gone a bit Peaky Blinders.
I went a bit Peaky Blinder, I did. Yeah. I sort of thought I'd got to be creative this year with regards to what we can and can't do and where we can and can't go. Supposed to have gone on the launch to Turin, ended up in Birmingham. Usual story, you know.
Well, it's very much the Turin of the West Midlands, so...
Isn't it? It is the Turin.
It kind of is in a way, because it's sort of Turin was Italy's Motown, and Birmingham, I suppose, was Britain.
Actually,
so you know, let's not be
actually
hasty.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it is Motown. You could so yeah. But what one thing that had me chuckling a little bit, which I feel like not many people would appreciate, apart from maybe the Smith and Sniff listeners, is that there's three driving modes in the new 500e, and it's like normal. Range mode and Sherpa.
What?
It's true. So you flick through the modes with this little toggle switch, and I phoned up Fiat and I flicked through the PDFs of the manual, you know, the launch pack, and I went, what's Sherpa mode? What is that? And they went, oh, it's sort of like just a get-you-home mode. Like, it shuts down aircon, no heating, halves the power of the car, so it won't do more than about 50 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour. And it's just like, you're sort of like, I've got to get home. I've got no charge left in the car. And it's called Sherpa.
I was quite disappointed that it didn't instantly transform the car into a sort of parts bin van from the 70s. But and then Jaws from the James Bond film comes and tears the roof off.
Well, and therein is the reason. In the video, I put a still picture of a Sherpa van that was next to a canal with British Waterways written on the side of it. Because I remember any time anyone mentions Sherpa, because I know you can get like Sherpa-lined shirts and things, because I've got a Sherpa fleece shirt. Mm. All I ever think about is just kind of shoggy 70s builders vans.
Yeah.
And the fact that I remember my dad used to sometimes bring a Sherpa home if he was working on... like a motorway project or whatever. There'd always be a pool Sherpa with a really lame flashing orange light on the roof. I got sort of fond memories of it. It's a proper 70s hangover kind of vehicle, isn't it? And they just lingered around like wet old farts for ages. And when was the last time you saw a Sherpa?
Well, I've seen late Sherpas. There's one that's parked not that far from here, actually. But, like, you know, proper sort of... into the 2000s. LDVs, yeah, yeah. Because, actually, I was going to mention this. I just remembered. I've noticed there are two car-based podcasts now. I won't name them because screw off.
We don't want to promote them.
But who've got... Actually, I shouldn't say screw off because I think one of them's invited us to go on there. But anyway, they've got their own vans. That are mobile studios. That. This is going well. Two excellent car podcasts that have their own vans that are their recording studios and go around. And I was like, what the... We've really missed a trick here. We should get a van. And I was trying to think what sort of van we should have. And all I could think was one of those later model LDVs. Not the LDVs. Little one, the 400, the big one, but like one that's ex-police with the Rover V8 in it.
Oh, what a great idea.
That would be a pretty tippity-top Smith & Sniff mobile recording van, except that I suspect it would be in a constant state of malfunction and we would never actually go anywhere.
But we'd never get to our destination.
Yeah, today we're going to Brands Hatch to interview Derek Bell on the podcast. Oh, no, we're not. We're stuck at the side. Stuck at the side of the A1 again.
The thermostat's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was quite a lot of stuff coming out of the bottom when I started this morning, and here we are.
I feel like we could just go... We could say, look, we can't go that old for reliability reasons. So let's go Mazda Bongo friendly. Or we could, I mean, if you want to go super ghetto, it would be, Toyota Previa? And we could just saw a big hole in the roof and put one of those dome, those clear perspex domes that you put on the roof of Grand Designs houses to let more light into the kitchen.
I feel like I've seen a Previa with a metal version of that.
Really?
Yeah, so why not just have a translucent one made?
Well, let's do it. If we could start... I bet you we could crowdfund enough for a very short MOT Previa.
Well, and they're pretty reliable, aren't they? So there's no worries there.
They are really... And they're rear-wheel drive.
Mm. Yeah, I discovered in the course of... again, sorry, this sounds like a plug, but in the course of putting together my new car trivia book, I discovered that the, you know, the Previa unusually had a bespoke engine. You know, usually Toyota, one of the reasons they're so successful as a company is because they share parts across a wide range of cars, and they cover their costs very quickly and easily, and they don't unnecessarily duplicate effort, which is why, you know, all Toyotas have the same electric window switches and so on. But for the Previa, they went to town and they went, no, because we want it to be, I mean, effectively, it's sort of front mid-engined, isn't it? And
yeah, and it is. And we want inboard.
We want the engine to lie flat, and that way we'll get a nice flat floor. Which is, it's a totally bonkers way of doing it, because, I mean, they must have had to go to whoever signed off new projects and go, yeah, we want to do a new people carrier. Yeah, excellent idea, good. What did you have in mind? Well, I think we wanted it to be mid-engined and rear-wheel drive. Okay, well, yeah, fine. That sounds really sensible.
It's an amazingly durable van that nobody cares about. Mm. I bet you there isn't a Previa in Europe. I couldn't speak anywhere else. I bet you there's no Previa in Europe that's looked after nicely.
That's a good point. Actually,
it's not a vehicle that anyone will look. They'll never get washed. No one will ever check the oil and go, oh, look, it might need a small top up of oil.
Yeah.
No one will do that.
Boris Johnson's don't even know where the engine one, is. I think Boris Johnson's got one. Yeah, the current Prime Minister certainly had a Previa, and I saw it in pictures. Brilliant. Once, and it did look like it had been horribly neglected.
Oh, like most of his children, under a blossom tree. and we've talked about Boris before, because hasn't he, this has been some strange sort of choddy cars seen about his person, like a first generation Ford Focus, and wasn't it a Citroen AX, like
on the driveway? I know, it's very odd.
When he brought the press out a tray of tea, and it was just like, what are you doing with all these sort of like mid 90s weird shit boxes?
I saw a Japanese Ford Focus import Gen 1 is shit. Previa. Like quite a recent one the other day.
Yeah.
And it's quite a nice looking car. It's got a really good stance on it. It's like, I don't know, it's just quite a nice looking car as enormous people carriers go. I'm going on Auto Trader here.
It's not a patch on the El Grand, the Nissan El Grand.
No.
What's the other Toyota Japanese import people carrier that sounds like an Enema, but it's not an Enema? Hang on, I've got to look it up.
I don't know what you mean. I was going to say about the Previa that, having agreed with the lunatic within the company who went, yeah, we should do a mid-engine rear-wheel drive people carrier, it'll be brilliant, with an enormous oval speedometer, and somebody went, absolutely, yeah, go for it. they came up with a bespoke engine for it, which is an inline four-cylinder that could be laying on its side, almost flat.
Is it almost flat?
It's almost flat. It's at 72 degrees or something, so it's almost flat. But having done that, I realised the question would be, why don't you, if you're going to do a bespoke engine, why not make a flat four or a flat six or something instead? But apparently, lying a four-cylinder down with the ancillaries, some of them are remote, gave a shallower engine than putting in a boxer, so that's why they did it.
I have respect for this vehicle. I've been on a couple of those, I said it before, a couple of those sort of banger rallies for charity. The Dumball, which does it for Teenage Cancer Trust. It's a brilliant event, and there was a couple of years where the go-to vehicle was a Prev, and the reason is because you're in your car for about 18 hours a day. And people just want cheap space, cheap, reliable space. Mm. And I went in one of them, and it was modified to look like the Beatles' Yellow Submarine.
Of course.
So it had a turret and everything. and someone inside had taken, I think, you can take rows of seats out and stuff, can't you? They'd taken one of the rows of seats out, and instead they'd put a hammock from like the B pillar to the C pillar diagonally, just in a hammock travelling along. I think this is a Euro NCAP absolute disaster waiting to happen. You're going to trebuchet yourself out of the car. but these are same. It's a very cool vehicle. Got time for. Should we get one? Shall we?
I'm just looking. There are no, what we'll term classic Previas on Auto Trader. or on eBay.
No,
that I can
they're
see.
Too cheap for AutoTrader.
Well, I can't see on an eBay either. They're all the second generation one, which is front wheel drive, and it's just sort of not as interesting somehow. Unless I'm
no, you can't do
should
that.
Should I do Estima? Let's have a look for an Estima. See if
oh, is that up. that's what I was trying to think of. Isn't there an Emina or a
Lucida? Here's one, £750, a diesel auto. What the fuck? Toyota Lucida Estima, 7-seater diesel auto, 4-wheel drive. Bloody hell! But this is classic shape Previ. Although the Japanese market ones were narrower as well.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
Gosh, you.
Which is
never ceases to amaze me. Oh, there was a Toyota Emina, which is the one I was telling you about that I thought was Enema.
Oh, but okay.
It's Emina,
right? Yeah.
And it's I think it's a derivative of the Estima. I mean, it's just turning into some sort of tongue twister. But
Emina Estima, or the lyrics to Cocomone by the Beach Boys.
It's
just
Emina,
a list of Japanese
Estima.
Market Toyotas. Previa, Estima.
Amina, Amina, Estima, Previa.
I don't... Oh, where are we? There's not an embarrassment of riches here. And I just want a...
They're very popular as banger race cars.
Are they?
Prevs. And the reason is because inboard engine. So you can use it as a JDM battering ram.
Crikey. I'm amazed they haven't been banned then.
I think they nearly got banned because they were... I think the it's one of those vans, nobody likes them, so they don't want to see them win. But the fact is, it can get absolutely destroyed from the back end because there's lots of overhang, and it can get destroyed from the front end, but it still kind of works. It's typical Toyota. They inadvertently created the ultimate banger race car instead of a people carrier.
Wasn't the mid-80s onward Nissan Bluebird an absolute banger star to the extent that got... banned.
Well, it's a weapon. They're still a weapon if you can find them. They fetch good money because even in engineless, you know, under CSI tarp form, you'd still see it around the short oval, no problem. Yeah, there's some cars which are just, they've got the right cross member, they've got the right chassis rigidity, they just work as a weapon of mass destruction. So, yeah. You know, talking of weapons of mass destruction.
Yes.
I was thinking when I was saw the Romain Grosjean fireball incident. I've met Romain. I think you've met him. Have you met him?
No.
Oh, I remember meeting him, doing a job with him that you know about back in 2012. I think it was when he just signed up with Lotus.
Oh, I remember you doing that.
And you will remember that because in a very strange way, I interviewed him wearing your jacket.
Yes. I remember that distinctly. You used my jacket for that job.
I borrowed your jacket because I wasn't wearing smart enough clothes of my own. So I borrowed your jacket. Your jacket has met Romain Grosjean.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
I've still got that jacket as well. I'll have to go downstairs and ask it how Romain Grosjean was.
I think you should send a get well message out to Romain Grosjean with the jacket on and say, "This jacket's met you." And he'll go, This is just the creepiest thing that anyone sent me in the last 48 hours.
Yeah. Well,
slash ever.
He probably is quite bored now. He's still in a private clinic. So I imagine,
of course, he is.
He's not been allowed to fly home. Well, I don't know. He maybe has now, but he certainly, last I looked, he was still being. He's released from the hospital he went to initially, but he was being looked after elsewhere, rather than being allowed to fly home. So he probably needs things to occupy his mind. And what could occupy the mind more than trying to work out what the merry fuck someone's doing, sending you a picture of a jacket?
Can you do it for me? Please do it. What do you reckon? I would, if I was Romain Grosjean, okay, and you've been laid up, you're in bed, you're kind of okay, but you just got to chill out for a bit. And you've done a few relaxation songs, you know, to kind of meditate and maybe a bit of stretching. And then it's like, right, I've got the eBay app on my phone. Bollocks, I'm gonna play eBay roulette. I'm a very wealthy Formula One driver, but I'm going to keep it on the down low and I'm going to spend no more than £800 on a car. within 20-mile radius of the hospital I'm in and then pay extra to get it delivered to the car park. I would absolutely... And you go, right, go on then, Grosjean, what are you going for? You got less than a grand. You're going to get it delivered to the car park and pay extra to have it paid and displayed for 2 days. What's he going to go for? What if Grosjean was going to get, you know, drive a sort of old shitter? What would Grosjean go for and why? Does he want something frisky? Does he go for big power? Does he go for finesse?
No, I don't know if he's one of those drivers that's actually into cars. I'm not sure. Because, you know, you get some Formula One drivers, they're just not interested in road cars because
they don't do anything that turns them on, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I've driven an F1 car, guys. You have nothing that can interest me. Whereas other drivers are, you know, Jenson Button being a case in point. Lewis Hamilton, actually, is quite... He's got his Pagani and stuff, hasn't he? And there's a few of them who are sort of into cars. Yeah. And there's a few of them who just honestly don't seem to give a flying toss. I remember... Karun Chandhok, who we both know a little bit, he once said to me that when he was racing for HRT, who was his teammate? I can't even remember now, it's a while back. But he said they'd get to an airport somewhere and then they'd sort of have, you know, they'd have hire cars each. And his teammate would get to the hire car desk and go, right, what have you got for me? Oh, no, I don't want that. No, I don't like them. Here, can I have a look at the list? And would be sort of like fussing over what they were going to be given as a hire car.
Yeah,
and Karun said he'd just be like, "Just give me the damn keys to whatever you've got. I just want to get out of here." he did not give a toss.
He's got to get to breakfast.
Exactly. Well, yeah, he's got a breakfast strategy, so he needs to. Yeah, he needs to get on that. But yeah,
it is funny, isn't it? Being a pro racing driver, but maybe not being that interested in cars. Is that I can understand it because it's a different level.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I love the fact that I hope. That maybe Romain Grosjean right now is on Car and Classic going...
That would be...
Right.
That would be nice to think. Obviously, it's nice to think that he's not badly injured and he seems to be getting better very quickly. But it would be nice to think that he's just there going, oh, bloody hell, I haven't seen an Alpine A610 for ages. I wonder if there's any for sale. A French accent, obviously.
And he thought... Yeah, and of course he'll just treat himself because it's like, I've survived. I'm doing all right. You'd have a little sort of moment of euphoria, hopefully, in that minute he'll be on Gumtree or something, and he's going to pull the trigger on something.
Well, also, this is his last season in F1 potentially because he doesn't have a drive next year. But what that does do is it liberates him from any sort of obligations to, being aligned to any particular car company. Which I know Haas, Haas sort of weren't anyway, but they were aligned to Ferrari. So, but now he can just go, you know, I really like Citroens. I'm going to go and buy a DS or something. I don't know. I don't imagine he would.
Well, but I think this is his perfect moment to... He'll get sponsorship from a local skip company and he can do a travelling show involving various stunts. There's always one of those travelling shows. I love them.
What sort of...
Stumbling across... Well, you know, where they just do, like... There's always a monster truck, and there's always a guy on a quad doing quite low, long jumps. You know the sort of jump I mean? It's very low, but it's very far. I enjoy going to them. I remember stumbling across one on holiday in Spain about 5 years ago. We took the kids, and it was these two... It was brilliant. I mean, honestly, I could have written a sort of a little comedy sketch just around these guys. There's like three guys and about 12 cars. So they were constantly running from one vehicle to another to another. And then these two blokes with identical Audi TTs. And you would have cried at the amount of punishment that they gave these TTs. And it was flat out in reverse, going straight towards one another from opposite ends of the stadium. And then they would do like a J turn, like really close to one another when you were VMAX on the limiter in reverse.
Oh, my God, why would you do these things?
Straight into second gear once you flipped it round. And these cars were taking it. And And I was just thoroughly enjoying it. I was also enjoying the fact that when the guy went out in the monster truck, which was the most tired, sorry old monster truck, Porsche, it just looked like it didn't want to play.
Is it like really going to a sorry. Circus and they've got a really mangy tiger or something? You just go, no,
it is. It's like
so
an elephant
to the tiger.
It was just like that. I mean, the fact that it took about a minute and a half to start it up when everyone was waiting. And then it was sort of, you know, a little bit dismal. But the guys who'd been thraping the TTs, one of them was going to, I don't know, get on a motocross bike and do something, jump over the whole stadium wearing a pair of trekky bottoms.
Oh,
but the other one, the other one was just having a cheeky cigarette just to the side of the where all the other vehicles were lined up. It was just, it was wonderful.
I don't think I could go to a show like that because A, the lack of mechanical sympathy, and B, just the constant fear that someone is about to get badly hurt.
It was on the ragged edge the whole time. And it was Spanish health and safety as well.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. Actually, that reminds
me. Didn't see any helmets.
We should wrap this up in a minute, but it reminds me, we're not doing readers' emails this week, but I do. It has just reminded me of one that came in last week, which is sort of pertinent, only in as much as you telling me about these TTs being sort of ragged to the limit in reverse, probably from cold, goes through me because I am a bit sort of mechanically, I think I'm more mechanically sympathetic than you are perhaps. And this guy, Ashley Secker, hello Ashley, emailed, and his first paragraph I'm going to disregard because it's compliments and we don't read out compliments. I know you both as excellent auto journalists. Oh, that's a compliment as well. Who have had some real seat time, lol, in various pieces of machinery on private test tracks. But my question is, which of you two would set the fastest lap time? And then he's given us a scenario, which is three laps of Brands Hatch, brackets Indy circuit. Good detail.
I don't know that.
In a Cayman GT4. No, I don't either. In a Cayman GT4, my favourite car. This isn't meant to show one up or be a dick swinging competition, just genuinely interested in which one is the most handy at hooking a lap. And I thought about this. I was going to forward it to you because I was thinking, now, I don't know. I don't think either of us would claim to be Chris Harris, but I think you're fearless than me, but I have more mechanical sympathy. So I think you'd be faster, but I'd look after the tyres better, was my conclusion on this one.
Yeah, I don't have a great deal of fear, but I'd warm the car up. I wouldn't do it cold, but I think if it was an hour long race versus a 20-minute race, I think the hour long, you probably have me.
I think I
might be in danger of the dreaded term overdriving.
Oh, I think I could do some overdriving too, but I'm generally you know me. I'm a bit funny about turning the steering wheel when the car's not moving and all that malarkey. So I am a bit sort of overly cautious.
Apart from unless you're heading towards a tree.
Yeah, well, I would probably. Yeah, but no, if the car wasn't moving, the tree would have to be heading towards me, and that's a whole different set of parameters.
Oh, sorry, that's just psychosis, is what you're
Yeah, well, that's because unfortunately I took a load of acid before getting into the car. Because it's the 70s and I'm the lead photographer for British Leyland brochures.
We should do a track day when we're allowed to do stuff together. Should we do a track day? I mean, personally, it's a lot cheaper and it's also a little bit more entertaining. Why don't we just do a skid pan afternoon?
Oh, I got invited to one not that long ago, before the last lockdown. Yeah, and I couldn't go, but there's another one coming up. It's someone we know is organising them. It's for charity as well, so we should do it. I was going to take my Defender, but I was worried a bit it might fall over or something.
Hey, that's a great. I could bring the Jimny. We could do inappropriate skid panning.
Inappropriate skid panning.
Shall we? That could be cool.
We'll do it. We have an open invitation to go from a man. Okay. Well, anyway, that's probably a good time to call this to a halt. But thank you very much for listening. And I have three things to tell you. The first one is, as you've already heard, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show, which currently features a road test of the new electric Fiat 500 in Birmingham, with Johnny dressed as a Peaky Blinder for some reason. Number two, I have a new book out. It's called Boring Car Trivia Volume 2. It's available exclusively on Amazon as a paperback or an ebook. Ideal for Christmas as a present, probably for yourself, because if you're the kind of person who wants a book called Boring Car Trivia Volume 2, you probably just want to read Boring Car Facts on your own on Christmas Day. and three... Elton John wrote a theme song for the film Planes, Trains and Automobiles. And it was all ready to go, but unfortunately was nixed by contractual wrangling and never went into the film.
I love Trains, Planes and Automobiles.
Me too. It's brilliant, isn't it? I feel like I just want to go and watch it now, as soon as I've mentioned it, because it's so good.
There's something good about it. Isn't there a really bad car in it? I'm just trying to remember what
That lead car that they hire is it's a Chrysler. What were they called? Town and Country or something? The convertible with the fake. But they'd sort of made it even worse for the movie, I think, hadn't they?
Yeah, it looked like it just was covered in like cheap chopping boards.
There's loads of extra footage in that film that's never been seen because they massively overshot. Yeah, apparently the original edit of that film was like 4 hours long or something and they had to cut it down. And one of the bits that got cut, one of the sort of plot points that got cut was that while they're in that car and they get stopped by the cop, who's Michael McKean out of Spinal Tap and Better Call Saul and many other good things. And that was a much longer scene, part of which was him telling them they'd overshot where they were going by 100 miles. And that was part of the...
100?
Yeah, the part of the plot was that they couldn't even make it to where they were going because they'd gone too far and, you know, sort of various shenanigans resulted. And they had to cut all these things out because it was far, far too long. John Hughes just went absolutely crackers and he wrote a really long script and then he actually went and filmed it all, the crazy fucker. So, yeah, it was far too long. And the other thing about that film...
I'm definitely watching that. Do you know, there's another next week then.
Another mad thing about that film is that when they showed it to test audiences, people didn't like it. And they didn't like it because in the original, although they got it down to time, they thought that... John Candy's character was a freeloader and they didn't like him and they thought that Steve Martin's character was a doormat because he was giving in to John Candy and paying for everything. And they fixed it.
Oh my gosh.
They fixed it by going back to the edit and they found a bit where John Candy's character goes, "Give me your address and I'll send you the money for this." And that just made him more sympathetic because it showed that he knew that he was taking liberties.
And that kind of just freeloading.
Yeah, and that kind of helped to fix it.
My gosh.
So, there we go. Thank you for listening to Smith & Sniff. Now please go and watch Planes, Trains and Automobiles and we will see you same time next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye. It's a podcast where I say stuff and Richard...